Case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed to the fifth case of the day, Hardy versus Chicago Housing. Mr. Smith.
Good morning. Thank you. May it please the court. Zane Smith for the appellate. I think this panel has an advantage in considering the issues in this case because of the previous case of Castro versus CHA. This court had already decided in that case virtually the exact same issues, the exact same questions, the exact same parties, with the exception of the plaintiff, that were raised and ruled upon in the underlying court. In Castro, as in this case, the CHA had decided to disband its police department and failed to give the proper notice pursuant to the Warren Act to the employees regarding their termination. In Castro, the issue was whether or not the CHA had even considered themselves to be subject to the Warren Act, and they had considered themselves not to be subject to the Warren Act. The underlying court in this case ruled in favor of the CHA on their motion for summary judgment based on really two issues. And those are really the two issues before the court. Was there a knowing waiver of the rights and the Warren Act rights in the settlement between the union for the class members and the CHA? And was there adequate consideration to waive their rights under the Warren Act? And I think the answer is they did not. They did not knowingly waive any rights they had under the Warren Act, and they did not provide any independent consideration for any rights that they had under the Warren Act in the settlement agreement. In the settlement and severance agreement. The question becomes, and there's an emphasis by both the CHA and the underlying court, as to severance pay, that somehow the payment of severance pay was compensation over and above any legal obligation that the CHA had to make to the class members when there was a termination. And that severance pay, first of all, the exact same issue was considered in Castro, and wherein the court said no. That severance pay was payable based upon a pre-existing legal obligation that the CHA had with the union, which is to bargain over the impact and effects of the termination. There's no question that the CHA did not believe that they were subject to the Warren Act. There was no question that the Warren Act did not even play into consideration by any of the parties at the time.
Castro, did they assert an affirmative defense on the release?
I'm sorry, Judge, say it again.
In Castro.
Yes.
Wasn't the release not at issue there because they didn't assert it?
That's correct. In Castro, the specific language of the release was not considered.
Is that what we're dealing with here?
Well, we're dealing with whether or not the release would have allowed them to escape the obligation under Warren Act, but the issue is whether or not the release itself contained any consideration that was paid to release their obligations under the Warren Act. The Castro court already decided that it did not, that there was no, that any payments that were made, and specific finding that the severance payments that were made were all based upon a pre-existing legal obligation.
So you're saying the release is unenforceable for lack of consideration?
I'm saying yes, as it applies to the Warren Act, because the federal statute, the Warren Act, says that the Warren Act rights cannot be waived unless they're separate consideration. You cannot waive your Warren Acts unless, you know, and I think it's good public policy, because if so, every union contract in the nation would say, well, by and part and parcel of this agreement here, we're going to you're going to put in a pre-waiver of any obligations we have for Warren Act notification. You can waive and you can bargain your rights under the Warren Act, but it has to be a knowing bargain and there has to be consideration.
Well, when you're relying on this Castro case, but doesn't, I mean, one of the problems you have in terms of this claim being time barred is in Castro, they sued 1 week before they were terminated, and it's no question it was a timely filing, but here the suit was nearly 5 years after termination, and I think that's a real problem for you.
Well, I agree that the statute of limitations was brought up. It was specifically not ruled on by the underlying court, at least in from what I read from the ruling on the motion for summary judgment. But even addressing that issue, Your Honor, the statute of limitations, and I think we addressed it very well in the brief, it's not barred by the applicable statute of limitations because the first of all, there is no law in Illinois as to what the statute of limitations for the Warren Act is. There's some discussion as to what it isn't. It isn't 6 months. And in our brief, we referred the panel to other jurisdictions and specifically other jurisdictions that have at-will employment. And those other jurisdictions, if you go through our logic, seem to show that in the absence of any specific statute of limitations, the Warren Act statute is determined by the state statute that most closely resembles the Warren Act. Well, and in this case, it would be 5 years.
Yeah, well, when we look at the... But how do you distinguish 735, the Illinois statute, 513-202, because that provision states that those penalties must be brought within 2 years. And why isn't that the statute that we should apply?
Because the
Warren... Rather than looking outside of Illinois.
I understand that. Because the Warren Act... Because the Warren Act is really not a personal injury claim. It is not a personal injury claim because for a number of reasons. First of all, the plaintiff is not required to show negligence. It's a statutory, strictly construed requirement. And the usual defenses to a negligence action, contributory negligence, assumption of risk, negligence of a fellow servant, all those other kinds of defenses are not available to a defendant in the Warren Act. And the other jurisdictions that have considered this question really look at the Warren Act as a breach of contract issue, that it's a breach of contract, and because there's no specific contract, the statute in Illinois that would most closely resemble would be 13205, which is a breach of a unwritten or oral contract.
Well, even if we agree that the claim isn't time-barred, I mean, isn't there a big problem? You're not arguing now that Hardy and Anderson didn't receive their settlement checks, right? They got their checks.
We are not arguing that.
Right.
Why
isn't that sufficient to bind them to the terms of the agreement?
Well, I don't think that there's any question that they're bound by the terms of the settlement agreement. Our argument is the settlement agreement doesn't bind them and is not indicative of any waiver of rights they had under the Warren Act. The payment, the consideration that was paid in that settlement agreement was for pre-existing legal obligations on the part of the CHA. And this was a hotly contested issue in the Castro case. And when we looked at in the underlying evidence in that was that the not only was the payments that were paid to the class members in Castro, which are, by the way, the exact same class of payments, which is basically severance pay, which, by the way, was $500,000 in Castro. The severance pay was $500,000 in Castro, and it was still determined that that severance pay was not for consideration of anything other than the pre-existing legal obligations that the CHA had.
Well, when we look at the release, though, it says it's intended to be construed broadly and shall be inclusive of all claims, whether such claims are known or unknown, liquidated or unliquidated. I mean, that's pretty... all-inclusive, all-encompassing language.
I agree, and that language is in there. But the statute specifically prohibits a waiver of the Warren Act without some kind of consideration. And unless this panel can find consideration in that settlement agreement for release of the Warren Act rights, I don't think the class I don't think the CHA can say that they should have the benefit of those payments.
Did you want to reserve some time?
I would, if I could, unless the panel has any other questions.
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
Mr. Relias?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I think by your questions, you've really zeroed in on the critical issues here and the insurmountable problems that the plaintiffs have to overcome but cannot overcome. First, we have the settlement agreement itself that, as has been pointed out by Judge Williams, the language was broad, covered all claims, known or unknown, and consideration was given in the sense of 2 days' pay. So we have a settlement agreement that released those claims, and the district court did rule on that issue and found that that settlement agreement was a bar to bringing Warren Act claims. Second, we raised before the court the statute of limitations issue, and the court declined to rule on that because it could rule on the release issue. But I think, again, as Judge Williams has pointed out, that it's clear that the 2-year statute of limitations found in Section 202 of the Illinois Code of Civil Procedure is the applicable statute.
Has that section been used before as a relevant statute of limitations for other federal statutes, that Illinois provision?
I really do not know, Your Honor. I do know that it would be a case of first impression on the issue of the Warren Act itself, which is one of the reasons why Judge Nordberg declined to rule on that, because he did not have to. But I can certainly tell you that that section is not just a statute of limitations for personal injury, but also for a statutory penalty, and that under the Supreme Court decision in North Star, which was cited in our brief, 515 U.S. 29, the Supreme Court has indicated that Warren damages are considered penalties. We have, obviously, a statute, and that the most analogous statute of limitations then would be the 2-year statute. So I think it's quite clear that the applicable statute of limitations for Warren Act claims in Illinois is 2 years. Unless the court has any other questions, I would just reiterate, as you have by your questioning, that in Castro, the settlement agreement was unfortunately not at issue. The CHA was precluded from raising that at trial, so that Castro is not applicable, and that the release there did not come into effect and was not considered by the court. So I think the case here is quite clear. We have a settlement agreement. It had a broad release of all known unknown claims, specifically mentioned federal or state, and also that we have the 2-year statute of limitations, and since, as Judge Williams again correctly pointed out, it was almost 5 years after these individuals were discharged that the case was filed, that their claims are also time barred. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elias. Mr. Smith?
Thank you. In regards to the statute of limitations issue, Freiermeyer versus Ampex, that court noted that Colorado is an at-will state, and imposed a federal mandate upon employers. That is, the Warren Act itself imposes a federal mandate upon employers that effectively obligates them as if bound by the terms of an employment contract. So that's why I brought up the issue of why 205 is the better section, because it really is that section that would be applicable in the event of an oral contract. What is also convenient, if you will, is that 13205 is the catch-all statute, where we can't make a determination as to what the statute should be. It is sort of the basket of what the statute should be in those cases, and in this case, 5 years. And it really does make the most sense. I would also note that when the district court made its decision, it did only look at the collective bargaining agreement, and was impressed and stated in his opinion that the collective bargaining agreement didn't refer to the Warren Act or the specific reference to the Warren Act. It's the settlement agreement, I think, that talks about the consideration. That's the question. Yes, Castro did not reference, and they were not allowed to bring up the issue of the settlement agreement, but the issue here is not the settlement agreement. The issue here is consideration. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed to the sixth case.